From the Carnegie Tsinghua Center in Beijing, China, this is the China in the World podcast hosted by Paul Hanley.
Welcome to the China and the World podcast. Today I'm pleased to be joined by Professor Cui Li Ru for his first time on the podcast. Professor Cui is joining us for a special series of episodes that we'll be posting in the coming weeks, which will commemorate the five-year anniversary of the China and the World podcast. It's hard to believe in some ways that this podcast is already 5 years old. I've had the opportunity to interview some exceptional scholars, policymakers, and other distinguished guests from China, the United States, and throughout the international community. We now have listeners in over 100 countries. Since starting the podcast, we've done 120 episodes to date. The podcast has been downloaded now nearly 1 million times from listeners across the globe, especially in regions of the world where the Carnegie Endowment has global centers. Whether that's Washington, D.C., Moscow, New Delhi, Brussels, Beirut, and of course, here in China. To celebrate our past 5 years, I'm going to be interviewing five of the premier Chinese international relations scholars on their views of the U.S.-China relationship, and I can think of no better scholar to kick this special series off with than Professor Cui Li Ru. Professor Cui is the former president of the China Institutes of Contemporary International Relations, known throughout the United States and the international community, of course, as Kicker. Kicker is one of the oldest and most influential think tanks in China, especially in the area of international studies. Professor Cui led the institution for 12 years, from 2005 to 2013. Professor Cui is now a senior researcher at the Tai He Institute. He is also a member of the Committee of Foreign Affairs of the Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference and serves as a member of the Foreign Policy Consulting Committee of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. He's Vice President of China National Association for International Studies and Senior Advisor to a number of other top Chinese institutions that focus on national security and foreign relations. His research covers U.S. and Chinese foreign policy, U.S.-China relations, and international security. Originally from Shanghai, Professor Cui went to Fudan University, joined Kicker after graduating in 1980, and has served in a number of capacities and senior leadership roles over the years, including as First Secretary and Counselor at the Chinese Mission to the United Nations in New York. Dr. Cui, it is a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be invited.
You began, as I said, focusing on American foreign policy and U.S.-China relations in 1980, when you first joined Kicker. Of course, that was 1 year after the normalization of U.S.-China relations. We're approaching the 40th anniversary. I want to start off by asking you, as you look back over those four decades, tell me what you think are the major lessons that we should take away from the past four decades of U.S.-China relations, and how should they inform our two countries in the approach to the bilateral relationship going forward?
It's a good question.
It's a big question.
Important, big question. I think the past 40 years experience we can learn from it is that it's well known, it's a principle that is 求同存异, that's in Chinese. That means they seek the common ground and maintain our differences. And because China and the United States are two huge countries with very different history and culture and also political system. Mm-hmm. And but we have a lot of things in common, and we can cooperate in many areas. So how to handle our differences is a very, very important thing in the past and in the future. But the differences in the past, we can put our differences aside when seeking our common ground. But in the future, I think when we have been closely engaged with each other.
Mm.
So sometimes the differences cannot just put apart, put aside.
Yeah.
We have to face it. Sometimes mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. differences will, the difference will be engaged with each other. Mm-hmm. So how to handle that differences is a new challenge mm-hmm. as I see in the future.
You know, currently in the United States, as we look back at the last four decades, there's a questioning, re-examination of our efforts to engage China for the purposes of shaping China's rise. In your view, has the U.S., has its engagement with China shaped at all China's own path, or the path of the relationship between the U.S. and China over 40 years? Does the U.S. have, has it had influence in that regard? And if so, does it still have influence?
I think no doubt, to me at least, have big influence in the whole process ever since China opened its door to carry out its reform. But maybe this kind of influence is not as that much as some Americans expected.
Or hoped.
Hoped.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is a very interesting question, issue, and I think I should have some further and very broad studies on these kind of issues. Because from China's point of view, and it would like to learn a lot of things from the outside world. And because the open door and the reform policy is based on that the realization and the recognition of that China should learn from many others' experience mm-hmm. to carry out its modernization program. So this is the very fundamental thing for mm-hmm. us to realize.
Is it possible that that China, now that it has progressed significantly in terms of its own development, is possibly not, does it feel it doesn't need necessarily to take advice from other countries? Was it more open, perhaps, in the early days of the relationship?
I think China, of course, has been more open than in the 1978. And China is going to be even more open in the future. And I think my observation and the research tells me the concept of being open is even more important than reform. Actually, mm. open is something in the heart of the reform from mm-hmm. the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So when the reform has been carried out, and China should be open wider and wider. So these things becomes the soul of China's modernization process.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we are talking about the common community or mm-hmm. the community of common interests.
Mm-hmm.
That must be based on the openness of China.
Mm.
Otherwise, you cannot talking about this common destination or shared destination, these kind of things. But then another challenge is, and every country has its own national conditions. And to maintain what belief is good for this nation and to prevent this something negative to influence it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, for the policymakers, it's very important decision-making process in all these process.
You know, in the administrations that I served in, George W. Bush administration and early days of the Obama administration, we focused quite a bit, not only on the areas where you talked about where we have differences, but also a big part of our effort was to try to enhance cooperation between the U.S. and China, especially as China became more of a global player. But now there's a lot of talk, much more talk, about the notion of competition. That competition now is playing a bigger factor in driving the relationship. And I wanted to ask you where you see, how you see this issue of competition, and where do you see the central sources of competition? In the United States, competition does not have to be a negative word. confrontation could be a negative word, but competition can be done. It's part of our economic system, of course. There's a way to have healthy competition, but there's a lot more talk about competition. And I wanted to get a sense from you how you see that dynamic and what are the central sources of that? Why is that a bigger issue now in the U.S.-China relationship than previously?
Good. First, about the competition. I think in China now, competition is also, generally speaking, it's a positive word. China has been building up the market economy. That is for sure. And so market economy, the central mechanism is competition. So the success of China's build-up of its economy, of its what we call the peaceful rising, I think is based on the positive competition. Of course, in this process, we also have learned how to compete with others. There's still more to be learned. And so this is no question of it. Then about the China-U.S. relations, we are talking about the competition. It means the strategic competition between the two big nations. And when we talk about strategic competition, sometimes the narratives in both countries could be a little bit different. In China, strategy is a concept. It's very, very broad. But in the United States, the traditional understanding of strategy is based on the military and the security kind of things. And so when China talk about the strategic competition means, in as I see, mainly now focus on the Asian-Pacific area. That means in the long period, United States has been playing the dominant role in these areas, at least for the security order. Actually, ever since after the World War II. And of course, some kind of competition between the United States and Soviet Union period. But especially after the Cold War was over, United States played a dominant role there. And China did not challenge U.S. role, generally speaking, for all these years. And when China and United States has been engaged in close economic relations, cooperations, and China just mainly maintains its core and important interests, and that means sovereignty, territory, integrity, these kind of things, and also political systems, stability. And but now the change is because China is rising up. And a rising up China becomes have much, much broader interests, and which has extended from within China's national border to the area beyond the border. And these kind of development will gradually constitute some kind of, what I can say, the that kind of relations with United States, that means we can have common mutual interests, but sometimes we can interest the conflicts with each other.
Will this necessarily develop in a more confrontational way, or do you think there's a way in terms of the, as you talk about, the strategic competition in the region especially, is there a way that this can work itself out where it doesn't create additional friction and potentially conflict?
The fact is now we see the frictions which become prominent
much more
between us,
pronounced.
Much more, and the tensions of this kind of competition. I think there is a big challenge between us is that each side define the core national interests in a different way. Actually, there is a perception gap between us. And so the strategic dialogue in the past years didn't work very effectively. And China believes what he has been doing is protect its core national interests, mainly its sovereignty, especially in some area like South China Sea issues. China firmly believes its historical rights of its sovereignty. And of course, when he talk about the historical rights, it means, at least as I understand, that there are some distinction between the reality and the historical rights. And but important thing is these historical rights is should be acknowledged, recognized at first. Then we can talk about the how to handle the realistic issues sometimes.
Mm.
But on these historical rights, some others, including the United States, could have different opinions on that.
Mm-hmm.
So that could, when China's interests involved in these areas and issues, then the competition becomes an issue between us.
Mm-hmm. Henry Kissinger was here recently in Beijing, mm-hmm. and he met with President Xi and other senior Chinese leaders. He came from Singapore, this new economy conference, the Bloomberg New Economy Forum. And when he was there, he called on the U.S. and China to speak openly to each other about red lines and also the concessions that each side would be willing to make to avoid conflict. Taking his advice, where do you see the red lines between the U.S. and China in this context, the strategic competition?
Red lines, I think some of the Chinese high officials or leaders, like Councillor Dai Bingguo, and describe these rights in some ways that including the sovereignty, including the integrity of territory, including the security of its political system, and including its vital interests for its economic development, roughly in these areas.
And how about on the concessions? Where is it that the two sides can make concessions to find a better way forward to avoid this dynamic of greater friction and potential conflict?
I think now we are in a transitional period between China and the United States.
Mm-hmm.
In this period, strategic competition becomes prominent because, as I pointed out earlier, United States has been the dominant role in these areas. And its dominant role is based on U.S. very strong presence in these areas, including its alliance system and its very close relations with some of the China's neighbors in these areas. So when China's rising up, its influence is rising up, sometimes it constitutes a kind of competition between the different interests and the influence. This is the one area.
Mm-hmm.
Some others, China has some difference in disputes with some of our American allies. And then when the tensions grow in American, sometimes because of various reasons in being involved in this kind of situation, that becomes another area of competitions. And also recently we see the competitions also including these economic trade relations. And this is different than before. Before, for many years, China-U.S. economic relations is regarded as
the pillar.
The pillar, mm-hmm. and also its complementary relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now China becomes more competitive in some
mm-hmm.
areas.
Mm-hmm.
Then Americans believe this competitiveness could constitute some kind of challenges to the U.S. dominance.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem is in this kind of position, situation is unprecedented
yeah.
in some way between the major powers. And that's what Kissinger called it's my view is we have to take some time to learn how to handle these issues between us. China is huge, it's rising up, United States established power and have dominant role in this area. Then we have some kind of conflicting interests. And but we do not have that kind of examples in the past history that
yeah.
we can just copy.
Yeah. Well, and because of some of these unprecedented challenges and factors that have entered the relationship, there's new areas of competition, and other factors, there have been calls on both sides to update the relationship and the way in which we interact, to construct an updated framework for the U.S.-China relationship. In fact, even before Donald Trump entered the presidential election, there were articles coming out of U.S. think tanks strongly suggesting a reexamination of America's own approach to China for many of the reasons that you and I have been discussing. As we begin to construct an updated framework for the relationship, I want to get a sense from you what you think the key consideration should be in that thinking. Said another way, what do you think a successful U.S.-China relationship would look like in this new environment?
First, the two countries should believe it is fundamental interest of both sides to develop still a kind of a cooperative relationship mm-hmm. between us. Mm-hmm. And to be that kind of relationship, I think first we should understand each other better than before. Mm-hmm. We understood each other in some way in the past situation, because in that kind of situation, which is a different relationship between us than now we are having. At that time, the strategic understanding and the roughly understand with each other's differences could probably okay. But nowadays, I think we should relearn with each other. I mean, mm. Study, review, mm. Mm. understand the other side better mm-hmm. in a much deeper way, mm-hmm. in the broader way. Mm-hmm. I don't think when I talk about the perception gap, that means nowadays both sides believe they understand the other side, mm-hmm. but actually they do not understand the other side enough.
In fact, maybe using old ways of thinking, not...
That's right.
Projecting them forward.
That's right, I agree. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem in both sides, mm. I believe. Mm. So, I still remember I pointed out earlier, we had a strategic dialogue for many years. Mm-hmm. But my view is these dialogues were not very effective. Mm-hmm. Mainly because they just have that kind of dialogue mainly to make the argument for themselves, mm-hmm. and do not have a very much that kind of effective dialogue to understand and learn the other side sincerely. And so that can bring both sides to a path to the solution.
Yeah.
So that's the major problems for all these years. And especially...
Both sides come together...
to find the effective...
To project their views, but maybe were they not listening enough?
That's right. Mm-hmm. And so there will be a process, as I see, and to we reassess what's the world, to understand each other better than before and mm-hmm. deeper than before. Mm-hmm. And it takes some time. Mm-hmm. And in this process, my opinion is that the best we can do is to manage our differences in a very much effective way.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about managing differences. We've talked about competition rising. You just mentioned cooperation. And as I said before, this was a fairly significant component of previous U.S. administrations trying to enhance cooperation with China on a range of issues. You see less of that today in the United States, less emphasis on cooperation, more emphasis on competition and managing and trying to resolve those areas of disagreement, especially in the trade realm and in the strategic areas that you talked about. There's some skepticism in the United States that we can really cooperate with China in a substantial way. But you just mentioned cooperation. The areas that the Obama administration cites as evidence of cooperation between the U.S. and China, the international climate change agreement, which was reached and could not have been reached if the U.S. and China had not done an agreement before that, and the Iranian nuclear agreement, the JCPOA. Trump administration, of course, has pulled out of both the climate agreement and the JCPOA. So those are not considered areas of cooperation today. And as I say, there's a healthy skepticism in the United States that we can really cooperate. How do you see the area of cooperation? Where can the U.S. and China really cooperate in a substantial way that would show cooperation is an important element in the relationship?
First, the cooperation, I think, can be developed further in our economic relations and also trade areas. But ironically, this is the area now we have fierce competition and we have the frictions or even battles on this area. I think the reason of that is because United States in the last 5 to 10 years experienced a very special period after the 2008 financial crisis and the economic recessions. And because of these consequences of these crises and recessions, and some kind of what I call the unbalanced development in the United States become more serious. So in a way, 2016 presidential election reflect this kind of unbalanced development in the economic, political, and the social arenas. Then the polarization becomes a very much a factor of the U.S. politics. And current period of China-U.S. relations, which has been deeply engaged with each other. So this domestic development could have very close impact to the foreign policy-making process. I observe what Trump has been doing. President Trump, his administration has been doing all these things. It's very much because of this domestic development. And in China, the situation is in a different way, but could have the similar effect to our relations. That is, China's economy now undergoing a very much what we call the deep reform area. And that means after 35 years fast growing of economies, and we find some issues and the contradictions and the problems which accumulated becomes more prominent, becomes the focus of society and the decision-making circles to handle it. But it's much more difficult to find the solutions. And then, because both countries in this internal transition period, and the number one or number two partner with each other of our trade relations have great impact on this internal development.
Yeah.
So the internal political economic development has been intertwined with our relation with each other. So that is the problem we have, the challenges we have.
Largely, as a result of our own domestic politics in China and the United States.
That's true. Actually, we all agree that China's market is growing, and China's import from the United States is growing. But it is not fast enough that can address U.S. economic problems, social problems at this period. So then Trump take the American first policy, then want China to give all the results he wanted in a very, very short period. And because that kind of demand for China is unacceptable. So then we see this kind of trade friction in the battles.
Mm.
I want to point out is that does not mean we do not have even larger area in the future for our cooperation in these areas.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes the politics is focused on the short-term
mm-hmm.
things. So mm-hmm. that's the challenges we have. Mm-hmm. But I'm happy to see that both sides also realized, and if the trade war going on, that will be disaster for both sides.
Mm.
So try to have useful dialogue and to find the approach to address the issues is also the common sense.
And as we're moving in not only the 40th anniversary of U.S.-China relations, but the 40th anniversary of China's own reform and opening up, and there's a lot of discussion here in China about energizing the reform and opening up as we move into the second 40 years or more. It seems that steps taken by China in its own interests to advance its own stated goals for economic reform could, in fact, help alleviate some of the tensions between the U.S. and China. And I hope that this is the direction things move in, where China is taking steps in its own interest to move forward on the reforms that were announced in 2013. The leadership said was the direction that China wanted to go. And it's many of those reforms, I think, that can address many of the areas of tension right now in the U.S.-China relationship. Final question I wanted to ask you, Professor Cui. I was at a fantastic discussion in the U.S. recently held by the Brookings Institution and the Yale China Center, where we looked at many of the questions you and I are talking about today. The final panel of the day asked four top China experts in the United States this question, that given where the trend of the relationship has been moving, is it possible that U.S. and Chinese interests are fundamentally incompatible? And I wanted to get your reaction to that question.
I do not agree it's fundamentally incompatible. I think fundamentally, if in a long-term view, I think we have more common interest, the common ground than we don't.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very firm on that view. But it depends in different periods. And the problem is now we are in a very, it's a fragile period. That is in, that means the transition. Transition mm-hmm. means, first, the structure between us has been in a process of new shaping process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mainly because China is rising up. And in U.S. foreign policy, and they believe it becomes something entitled, then the U.S. play a dominant role forever in the regional, in the bilateral relations, and in the world orders.
Mm.
But I think things will change, and every country should adapt itself to the changes. Of course, changes does not mean the bad change. It could be positive.
Mm.
But as a policy making process, we have to find that we can arrange our relations in the positive directions. But if we have the perception that, just like Kissinger said, we are in a sense of diametrical opposite conditions, and that mainly, I understand, is because of different perceptions. And then we could go to a very tragic direction.
Mm.
So now China, United States in this period. When you try to argue it's incompatible, you can find a lot of argument, experience to just that argument.
Mm-hmm.
But if you believe it's incompatible, you can also find the evidence and argument to adjust it.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends the policymakers in this period to handle mm-hmm. these relations, to find common ground that could bring us in a better relationship.
And as you say, it's a fragile period. So
that's right.
Very important that the two sides make the right decisions going forward. Yeah. Professor Cui, over your close to 40 years at Kicker, you've made significant contributions to the U.S.-China relationship. And I know you're going to do the same here at the Taihe Institute. I want to thank you very much for joining the China and the World podcast for our special series commemorating the five-year anniversary. And I very much appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's it for this edition of the Carnegie Tsinghua China and the World podcast. I encourage you to explore our site and see the work of all our scholars at the Carnegie Tsinghua Center. Thank you for listening. Be sure to tune in next time.